My name is Minghua Zhang from University of California, Davis. Today, I'm going to talk about management-oriented sensitivity analysis for pesticide transport in watershed-scale water quality modeling using SWOT. I'm going to do a little bit differently. The highlight of the talk, really two things. We did the sensitivity analysis by running the model one input parameter at a time. So our results really looking into the local sensitivity in the watershed. And then we allow us to see which parameter are really sensitive in terms of water quality. So that's one. Two, we did the model runs simulate from field into the watershed, okay? So we were able to see the best management practices, the removal efficiency, or efficacy, whichever we can call. All right, with that, I'm gonna start the presentation. Well, we all know non-point source pollution is a problem from agricultural practices. And these include nutrients and pesticides. And many of those pesticide residues have been found in surface water in California specifically. So many regulations are in place. And many regulations are trying to implement Clean Water Act so that to protect surface water as well. So with that, many people are thinking what the practices would allow us to improve water quality. And our study objectives are focusing on SWOT modeling of pollutant fate and distribution, looking at specifically on two pesticides, chlorpyrifos and diazinal OPs, because OP pesticides were the problem in Sacramento River and San Joaquin River in California. Number two, we like to evaluate, in the computer sense, which best management practices are more effective than the other. All right, so there are a few keywords. Let's go through it. SWOT represent Soil Water Assessment Tool. Hydrology and water quality, we talk about stream flow, sediment, pesticides of chlorpyrifos and diazinal. The location is Orange Steamboat Creek. It's a watershed located in the west side of San Joaquin River in California. When we talk about stochastic simulation and sensitivity analysis, we really means one parameter at a time. Structural BMPs, it's best management practices. What is SWOT? SWOT is a basin scale continuous time daily step simulation model developed by USDA, and it's widely used. You'll find many literatures talk about how to use the SWOT model. And it predicts the impact of management on water, sediment, and agrochemicals. Okay, it could be used to assess TMDL, it's total maximum daily load. And then we are using this to evaluate efficacies of BMPs. Here's the SWOT functions, looking into the water balance from this system. Let's say you got a precipitation comes in and water evaporates, gets in tree takes, and then there's a runoff, there's a percolation. And then in the watershed sense, the hydrology, see you have the water goes this way, so it's in the river channels, little dots representing nodes, and then you have the channel flow. With all these processes, we are able to simulate water quality, nutrients, pesticides, and sediments. The real equations are really two or three. Soil water balance. So when we talk about pesticides or nutrient transport and fate, first thing we talk about is hydrology model. So we make sure that the water goes correctly. You got input, you got outputs. So that's your water balance. And then You make sure that your channel routing routed correctly. You move the water through. So here's an equation to talk about how the water coming in and then the processes in stream and then goes out. Okay. All right. Here's a site of our study, California. And this is called the Central Valley, has a two. We divide the Central Valley into two valleys, the Sacramento Valley and San Joaquin. So San Joaquin is right here, and this orange Steamboat Creek is just right there. We enlarged it. This is the San Joaquin River, which is a big river and has a lot of problems that many people research on. And then this part is the agricultural part that our simulation really focused on. These were rangeland and forest. All right. Well, first we select a set of parameters and parameter selection, and these are the descriptions, too detailed to go through, but this study has been published in Environmental Pollution. If you're interested, you can search it, and probably in this month's issue, and you'll find the details. We divide into a category one, parameters for pesticide yield and edge of field, BMPs. We're also looking into different set of parameters. Category two, the parameters for in-stream pesticide losses. So I'm not going to read each variable in detail. All right, model calibration. We got two gauging stations run by USGS. We use their data. So here's their number. Variables include a stream flow rate, sediment loadings, and pesticide loadings, specifically for chlorpyrifos and diazinon. Criteria to judge whether the model is calibrated correctly, we got two. NSE is a Nash Sutcliffe efficiency and percent bias. Okay, now this NSE is usually as a rule of thumb, if it's more than 0.5, we say it's a good model. And if it's less than that, we think it's all right. If it's more than 0.3 and it's workable, we say, oh, okay, it can be improved. But more than 0.5 is where we think it's working well for the matching, the validation or calibration. Percent of bias depending on your whether it's a sediment or pesticides, it gets varied. But again, rule of thumb is more than 50%, more than 25% for the bias will be good. All right, validation, we make sure that irrigation, then the dormant season separate, because we specifically looking in this is orchards. Orchards use a lot of OPs, and that's where the problem comes. That's also why we divide this two into different seasons, so then we can model them differently. Here's what we got as a model calibration. As you can see, in the two gauging stations, stream flow, it's pretty good. In this two stations, you see NSE, the rainy seasons, dormant season, it's all above 0.5, and the bias is all pretty good here, except that diazinon is 0.5. We think that's also acceptable because of the pesticides. And then the same way here, irrigation season from April to October, we got a pretty good coefficient matching. And if you make these two seasons together as an overall, and we still see a very good numbers in the criteria, so that we believe the simulation model works pretty well in those cases. We use the local sensitivity index to measure whether which parameter is more sensitive than the other. And it is really the output versus input. Output versus input, P as predicted. And as I mentioned earlier, we did each parameter run at a time. So in other words, you got 24 parameters hold as a constant, and only one varying you run 50 times. So we got many of those runs, and then you'll find the results and average. Here's our sensitivity analysis results as a land phase. In other words, it's the soil processes. So the surface runoff, as you can see, CN number is a curve number. It's the soil runoff curve number. You get higher values, so whether it's a surface runoff or sediment yield. And for chlorpyrifos, you see the same thing. Okay, you see the same thing. So we say soil curve number is very sensitive in this simulation. We also see higher numbers here, which is a half-life in soils, and then the aggregate slope stiffness, and then there is a KOC values. And then in the surface runoff, you also see available water capacity as your initial in the soil layers, and then the soil conductivity. And there's one more yellow here is the universal soil loss equation. So in other words, these were yellow highlighted. We think that they are sensitive parameters affecting the surface water runoff and erosion processes. Well, here is the water phase, the sensitivity results. If you're looking into the yellow part, here's a channel cover factor. There's a Manning's value, and there is the average slope of the main channel. Okay, you also see that organic carbon normalized partition coefficient, so KOC, and then you see the channel sediment routing, the linear parameter, is sensitive. So again, these parameters were sensitive that in our study. And we think that it makes sense because the surface part, you are concerned with the surface, the curve numbers, and then the erosion factors. In the water, obviously, the pesticide properties are important. All right, what were the management implications? So we select a few BMPs to simulate. Preventative BMP, pesticide management, application management, reformulations, of course. The source control is very good. It's probably the best. Then what if you have to use available ones? So we're looking into the mitigative BMPs. Now, here are a few that we used. Grassways, residue management, tail water pond, filter strips. Well, we used some from literatures for those parameters, and some were built-in functions from SWOT, especially for the filter strip and tail water pond. And here are some effectiveness for BMPs after we run the simulation model. Residue management, these were the parameters we selected. Well, effective 20%, okay? And then the reduction-wise, sediments, pretty good, 47% in the yield. And then the chlorpyrifos yield is 32, but the load is a bit low for the sediment, but for chlorpyrifos are pretty good. Now, you probably wonder why I didn't have diazinol here. The true story is diazinol in these settings, the BMPs not working very effectively. So chlorpyrifos was way better. The reason why we think that diazinol was much more water soluble, the KOC factor is way lower than chlorpyrifos KOC. Well, when we look into the filter strip and tailwater pond, grass waterways, again, it's pretty good for the sediments and chlorpyrifos. Okay, pretty good. So we think that as a BMP to filter, reduce the sediment runoff and the chlorpyrifos runoff into the surface water, these BMPs are more effective than the other. All right, so there are a few things that we can really think about for future work or discussion. Just like I mentioned, the OPs are water-soluble. Some BMPs may not work as well. Diazinol, for example, even though chlorpyrifos were good, but relatively. Okay, sediment were wonderful in terms of removing the sediment into the water. Then there is a pesticide properties. So here's an equation. We're looking into the chemical partitioning in dissolved and particular phase. So in other words, there's a solid and the liquid phase. There's a fraction, and again, described in detail in the paper. But that's where we suggest that when we implement a BMP and need to really think about the pesticide physical chemical properties. Again, there is a magnitude and seasonality of a sediment because there is a water associated with it. In California conditions, there is a dormant period, which is a rainy season. But irrigation season, usually the runoff is less. So, of course, you are generating less sediment yield during that time. So here is the data to show that. Now, we also think the local sensitivity analysis is useful to determine governing factors and appropriate BMPs for the specific yield conditions of climate and hydrology and the landscape. In other words, most other studies that we have seen were sensitivity analysis for the entire catchment. But what we did was just looking into one watershed, going through each of the parameters and then finding out their sensitive parameters. And that's all I have for today. And thank you very much. And if you have questions, I'm here to answer. Questions? Yes. Sure.
Is the model underestimating, say, plant ET in those situations, where the earth model is dry as it really is, or is it saturated conditions, or is it not partition? So I'm just trying to get at why, because in field studies, I think you'd see some remediation.
So the question is why we do not see diazinol reduction as effective. Again, this is a watershed scale. We did have the field, edge of the field, simulated as well as the watershed. Now, what we believe that during the in-stream processes, those highly water-soluble chemicals, you do not see at the end of the outlet that as effective in reduction. Why? Maybe there's other processes that coupled or confounded, and maybe degradation processes occurring during that in-stream. But you are so right. Field study, edge of field, you do see a good reduction of diazinol if you do have some filter strips and all that, best management practices, which actually in the Middle West, they do have quite a those available. Thanks. Any other questions? Yes.
You have been emphasizing that sensitivity analysis with one parameter is better. Don't you think if you have multi-parameters, the interaction will give you better?
Very good in that sense. Question is why one parameter is better than the overall? Well, can't say one way is better than the other. But if you are looking at a sensitivity in a catchment as a whole, you can make many runs. You are not looking at, well, yes, you have all these interactions and all looking as a whole, but you are not specifically looking at which factor is the driving factor. Our purpose is to see, all right, with all these parameters in the equation, which one governing what processes? So that's why we did what we did. And we believe, again, with the management in sense, all right, if you say one parameter is more sensitive, but you are managing in a different way, then of course, it may not help. That's why. Any other questions? Or maybe question now open for previous speaker too. If you have any for previous ones? Yes. Yeah, why don't you come here? Yeah, why don't you come up? Because there's a speaker so we can hear. Yeah, any questions for any of us that presented this morning? We got a few minutes for discussion.
Yeah, I wanted to give an additional, adding something to my response. Actually, the team at University College Dublin that I worked with, they are into a project now where they collected data on 120 farms, getting actual environmental quality data on biodiversity. And the idea is to equally collect proxy indicators on those farms in order to do a validation of the indicators that we used with the Agri-Environmental Footprint Index. Yeah, you're right. The missing link is often this validation of indicators. But it takes an awful lot of time and money to do that kind of exercise.
Let me respond by saying I'm very positive about what you're doing. And I think with the fact that we don't have the data, it doesn't make any difference to the public. Mm-hmm. They still have a perception.
Yeah.
And that perception, frankly, in the public's eye, is the data until we present it. Now, I don't know whether we'll be able to take the data retroactively and be able to go the other direction and say, no, you overestimated this particular issue or underestimated it, and it could be here. That's reality.
Yeah, and I'm afraid that the reality of policymakers and maybe society in general, public in general, they want a simple answer and not something complicated. And that's what we're dealing with when we're moving into that policy area, bridging, between research and policy, say. So that's another aspect that comes to it, I'm afraid. Under landscape, I think the knowledge, first of all, the landscape issue was not as strictly defined as the natural resource and biodiversity issue. So in that sense, it was already a bit fuzzy from the start. I mean, we mostly looked at cultural heritage aspects and aesthetic values, but already moving into aesthetics, it's quite subjective, no? So in terms of stakeholders involved, I must say the landscape pillar was maybe the weakest one, yeah.
I have a question for you. When you're looking into all this scoring, like you mentioned, you have all these metrics. Mm-hmm. Of course, I understand that the scores were assigned with each of those quantity by expert opinions. How you aggregate them at the end?
Aggregation of the indicators.
Use a natural resource, for example, you have many variables.
Yeah.
Each of the variables, you have some quantity, and then you assign scores to each variable, right? So at the end, you have a natural resource as a score. And then you got three of those, right? So And then three of those you were weighted.
Mm-hmm.
By each of the natural resources score, how you get those scores into one score?
All with this weighting exercise.
I thought your weighting is natural resource biodiversity, and then the
And also within each, so let's say the first level of weighting is natural resources against biodiversity against landscape. That's the first round. The second round is within natural resources. So we're moving to the second level of management foci now. Crop and animal husbandry against physical farm infrastructure against natural and cultural heritage. So then we get already weights for the nine dimensions, say. And then within each cell, we also ask to give weights, attributes, weights to the individual indicators.
Have you used your model, validate, or go to a different site, do the same thing, and then come out?
Well, within one case study area, so within one farming context, say, we use the same weights, but then for, as you've seen on the slide that I presented, in the both case studies had different weights.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the, I mean, yeah, just people perceive priorities differently in the different areas. And I think you have to work with those, look at priorities within a particular context.
In fact, I concur with your comments. Mm. Let's say California wants to use it.
Mm.
And then we have to develop another matrix. Just take your, maybe the variable names, but really the quantity, whichever, needs to be everything new. Is that correct?
Well, you can definitely learn from similar experiences, but I'm afraid you really have to look at the context you're in to come up with. I mean, you can do like the DGP and come up with that's what we thought at first with this project, that we'd come up with a list that would be valid throughout Europe, would be valid within any imaginable agri-environmental context, but that's just not, I mean, that's too far from the reality, I'm afraid. So.
More, but
you talk about a particular issue, say cultural value, then you say, okay, I want everyone to rank it from 1 to 10 and we take the average, or do you work on it until you get some sort of consensus?
We first asked them to do this exercise individually, and then so we went back to our office, say. Then we had the next meeting presenting the results and trying to get a consensus, which happened in the end,
Any more questions? Well, thank you very much. The session ends. Thank you, all speakers.
Thank you.
Thank you.